Welcome to Chain Reaction, the Foreign Policy Research Institute's flagship network of podcast series examining the political, security, economic, and social trends shaping Europe and Eurasia. Throughout the year, we're talking with experts about developments in Russia's war in Ukraine, the new European security order, the past, present, and future of the Baltic states, Russia's political economy, and great power competition in the region. Join us each month for
Bear Market Brief,
Baltic Ways,
Report in Short,
The Continent,
and of course, our flagship Chain Reaction. New episodes are available each week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This week on Baltic Ways.
Welcome to Baltic Ways. I'm your guest host, Ben Gardner-Gill. James Montgomery Baxenfield is a junior research fellow at Tallinn University School of Humanities and a doctoral candidate with the dissertation Footnotes to the Past, Forgotten Episodes of Latvian-Lithuanian Federation and Confederation, 1885 to 1984. I spoke with James about this project and about his project Finding Morta, an academic and creative work about the first and only queen of Lithuania, the 13th century Queen Morta. James's account of his travels for Finding Morta will accompany this podcast on aabs-balticstudies.org. Now, to a park bench in Kaunas, Lithuania, for the podcast. So, let me set the scene. We are in a beautiful park in Kaunas, Lithuania. It is the eve of the 15th Conference in the Baltic Studies, Conference on Baltic Studies in Europe. And it's been a great day. James and I have both gotten in this afternoon. James, we're going to talk a little bit about a couple of your projects. So I want to start by talking about Finding Morta. So I had occasion to actually see Morta's name in the Museum of the Grand Dukes of Lithuania in Vilnius yesterday when I was there. And that was the first time I had seen her name in Lithuanian history. Admittedly, I did not study Lithuanian history. So I imagine that we've got some people listening who know the backstory, they can talk to you all about the Grand Dukes and the Lone King of Lithuania, but could you tell us a little bit about Morta, what we know about her, what we don't know about her, and how you got interested?
Certainly. Well, what we do know about Morta is not very much, at least from the point of view of sources. Mm-hmm. Very simply, she was the wife of King Mindaugas from 1250s until the early 1260s. And she seems to have died. We don't know how, perhaps natural causes, perhaps not. 1 year before the assassination of Mindaugas. But beyond this, we don't really know that much more. Of course, there's been legends and stories that are built up around her during the National Awakening, later stages of Lithuanian history. But in terms of concrete knowledge of who she was and what she did, we don't really know that much. Even the primary sources that we do have are a little bit problematic. If we take the Chronicles, for example, they're written by enemies, usually after the fact by, you know, some years at least, or decades rather. Yeah, that's basically what we do know about her. And a little bit in the way that you describe yourself, by going to the museum and seeing her name for the first time. When I first began studying, or when I first became interested in Lithuanian history as an undergraduate, I was very, you know, attracted to the topic of the Grand Duchy of Lithuania, medieval Lithuanian history. It reminded me very much of Arthurian legends from growing up in England, but with, you know, real-life characters as such. Whilst Morta was there, of course, she was always very much in the background. Mm. And I think that was the beginning of my kind of wondering, like, oh, who was this person? And that's kind of where it comes from.
Mm. Got it, yeah. And obviously, I mean, Mindaugas is a massive figure in Lithuanian history, to understate that probably even. And, you know, his consort here gets short shrift, perhaps. Yeah.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. So you embarked on an actual walk, a physical journey, Finding Morta, which is going to be part of a larger project. Can you tell us a little bit about that project as a whole, which I know is sort of a creative academic project, and sort of the purpose behind this trip?
Okay, good question. So yeah, the Finding Morta project is essentially a book that I'm working on, or a manuscript that's composed of three separate parts: a historiographical overview, a sort of travel log, and a piece of creative nonfiction based off the first two sections. Basically, this is done within the framework of the Bolmanis grant as a way to try and popularize Baltic studies. And I thought that Morta would be an interesting personality to investigate through a few different means, through history, through traveling to the location, and then through fiction as well. Partly because she is in the background, but at the same time has you know, great potential to be a very interesting figure. Yes, I recently returned back in spring. I took a walk from Aglana to Cocknesset. Now, basically, just to the east of Aglana, there's a small castle mound called Madalanu. And this is reportedly the birthplace of Morta. It's a castle mound, not particularly big, still survives in the present day, or at least most of it. Part of it has been farmed in the past. And essentially, I took by Google Maps, it was a 130-kilometer walk, but with the little excursions that I made to historic sites and things like that, after, according to my GPS, it was a little bit over 200 kilometers. And I did that trip in the course of 6 days. Now, the first 3 days were spent sleeping outside in the open. And the main reason for this was that I wanted to get a sense of what it would be like to move through this part of Latvia without any modern conveniences or luxuries. Just to get an idea, more for the non-fiction part, and also a bit for the travelogue, just to get a sense of people, how they interact with a stranger just wandering through there.
Yeah.
But then, as soon as I hit Jakobspils, and from there onwards, I stopped in accommodation and was showering every day. And,
Yeah. Excellent. So, continue on that. I mean, so 200 kilometers in 6 days is a significant amount of walking.
Yeah, I felt it. Yeah, at the same time, it's, you know, roughly 8 hours walking a day. There's plenty of people out there who, you know, have jobs where they're on the feet all day long. So yeah. It is a long way to walk, but at the same time, it's nothing so far out there.
It's not absurd. Yeah.
Exactly. It's manageable.
Yeah. Got it.
And it was a great experience overall. I wasn't hitchhiking any point of this journey, but particularly during the first 3 days, I imagine I was looking a little bit disheveled because, you know, I was quite literally sleeping outside. But the amount of cars that would slow down and stop and just offer me a lift without even putting out my thumb was really quite astounding in a way. And quite often people would be asking, are you okay? Do you need some help or something like that, without, you know, me specifically wanting to engage them for some sort of help. But throughout the course of the whole journey, so not just the first 3 days, but the whole 6 days, I was dropping in places of historical interest, whether they just be sites at the side of the road, but also visiting museums and information centers and asking people about this legend of Morta. And what I found was that in and around Aglana, basically everybody was aware of it, but not in such great detail. It was kind of like part of the story of the location where they came from. It was somewhere in the background they was aware of.
Yeah, so they knew, like, okay, there's Mindaugas and there's wife and, yeah, okay, great.
Exactly, yeah. The further that I moved away from Aglana, the less people knew about it. Although, generally speaking, everyone was quite interested in the project, at least who I spoke to, and particularly in Cocknesset, actually. When I got there, the first person that I spoke to, I won't mention who they are specifically, but at first they thought that I was there to talk about a different person. And when when I started mentioning dates, they said, okay, I don't know what you're talking about. No, I'm not talking about this person. I'm talking about somebody else. I've never heard of this before. And immediately she went to the books that she had available. She went online and was really quite surprised that she'd never heard of this legend before. Huh? And with that person, I've been in the email dialogue since. And there might be another aspect of this project coming out of that in the future.
Hopefully. Wow, that's fantastic. I mean, so what you've discovered there is a very wide range of historical knowledge. I would maybe even venture to say long-term historical memory, potentially. And you, an outsider, have captured the imagination of someone living there. So could you tell us a little bit more about sort of what you got out, however you define that, of this journey?
Okay, I'll try. As I mentioned before, part of it was just to get a sense of what it was like to move through this part of the country and the way that people live and interact with their environment, and also people, you know, the people there. There's plenty of little stories about this that I could tell, just from completely mundane things, such as passing a body of water and just noticing where the way that people interact with each other whilst fishing, seemingly as a hobby, but also for the purpose of getting food.
Yeah.
And the way that they store their equipment, or just simply leave it there. So there's not this sense of, nobody's going to come along and steal my fishing rod. I can just leave it here overnight and come back.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, about people just stopping to see if I was okay and if I would like some help. So there seems to be a good sense of community there, which was one of the first impressions. And some of those other stories will color some of the characters, hopefully, within the nonfiction elements of the manuscript.
I'm interested to know more about this nonfiction manuscript. Have you written nonfiction before? You know, what inspired you to include that as a portion of this project in particular?
Ooh, good question. I've tried to write fiction and nonfiction before, not with particularly great success.
As is the case with most of us, yes.
But the reason why I wanted to include it in this manuscript, which will hopefully be published in the future, was that I thought that having these three popular genres of history, travel writing, and fiction would be a good way to engage a broad audience. Mm-hmm. Or at least that was the idea of it. Mm-hmm. We'll see if it works like that.
Yeah. Well, I'm certainly interested. I think you'll have to keep us appraised of where this is going. And at this point, I also want to... Because you've talked about now, Morda was a Latvian princess. Then
according to the legend.
According to the legend, yeah. Right. And Nogas, of course, Lithuanian.
Yep.
You also had another project going on about Latvian-Lithuanian ties and integration. Could you explain a little bit more about what that project is, and we can chat about that?
Certainly. So this is my doctoral research project, so mm-hmm. my dissertation, basically about the idea of establishing a Latvian-Lithuanian state of one form or another. And whilst this is something that you will find in the history books, it's largely isolated to the end of the First World War. However, even though it wasn't particularly popular, or, you know, in terms of widespread, except for that brief period at the end of the First World War, and even then only within certain communities, it has sort of a longevity to it that lasts for roughly 100 years from when the first person to really start promoting it with enthusiasm started to publish about it in Lithuanian-American newspapers, and then right up until the Soviet period.
Mm. Okay. So, I mean, that's quite a period there. I mean, obviously, you have the national awakenings at the front end of that, and then you have Soviet oppression at the end of it. I mean, and that probably is no coincidence, I'm going to guess. So, obviously, Latvian and Lithuanian as peoples, as languages, as peoples, as cultures, share a lot of similarities, but are also very distinct. It goes without saying. And so, to hear about that arising in the context of national awakenings, which were very nationally specific in many cases, is interesting. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
I can try. A huge, complex topic.
Yes.
I appreciate that there are different interpretations of how this goes. Personally, when I'm reading from my readings of history, there's a lot of different types, a lot of different forms of national identities, at least at the very beginning. And not to say completely different from one another, there's many overlaps and this sort of thing, but basically during the stage of nation building, there are different ways it could have gone. Mm. And also in state building as well, the states that exist today,
yeah,
they weren't guaranteed. And anyone who's looked at the end of the First World War and the Paris Peace Conference could see that it could have gone some different ways.
Right.
And obviously this is where this idea of a Latvian-Lithuanian state first becomes really quite a prominent thing. It did capture the attention of foreign diplomats and politicians. Mm. And for a time, in 1918 and the very beginning of 1919, it seemed as though that, from an international perspective, could have been the most likely way that it would have gone. Although I have to be careful here. I don't engage with counterfactual history at all.
Yeah,
I report what happened and interpret the
yes.
information. But I don't. At no point do I ever venture into, well, if this had happened, then,
yes,
yeah,
and it's a dark road, and it's very windy, and you will end up losing your track.
Absolutely. If I may, actually, going back to briefly back to the Morta project,
very much relevant here as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's actually one of the challenges of it, and one of the things that made me want to kind of take on that little project, because of this risk of venturing into counterfactual history, just because there is so much, so little information there.
Right.
I think that's also one of the reasons why I wanted to bring in the fiction aspect of it as well, a little bit of a safety net.
Yes. Well, I mean, it helps provide some color. You know, if the historical record is so, not even stricken, it just was somewhat bare to begin with.
Yeah.
And also because, as you said, you have all of these not very generous sources. Mm. Enemies writing 3 decades after the fact are never known to be reliable narrators.
Yes. Although, incidentally...
Helpful, though, perhaps.
True. Yeah. And actually, even though these chronicles were written by enemies, for want of a better description, opponents, Mortar actually comes off quite well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, linking these two things together, so Morta comes back around to wider consciousness, popular consciousness, let's say, around the time of the National Awakening, as there's sort of, would it be appropriate to say, sort of revisiting of medieval history in Lithuania, for example, or sort of re-envisioning of what it means to be Lithuanian with this as a background? How would you describe that?
Mm. Okay, so there are different phases of this. It's an idea that keeps reoccurring, although I should really stress that it's never particularly prominent. It's always in the background. It's very much a fringe idea that people keep coming back to. periodically. So whilst it may not be the most prominent legends or simply stories of the kinship between Latvians and Lithuanians, to me, it's certainly one of the more interesting ones, that, particularly as it's associated with the time which is the beginning of Lithuanian statehood.
Mm.
And, of course, at the risk of venturing into counterfactual history, if that statehood essentially began with the union of a Lithuanian king and a Latvian or Latgalian queen, for want of a better description, that is basically the beginning of statehood in the region that begins with a union of Latvia and Lithuania in one form or another, which is why it came up in my doctoral research, even though it was a very small aspect of it. And again, very much going back to my times as an undergraduate and just seeing Mortar in the background, again, I became curious about this and thought, okay, I want to explore that more.
Yeah.
And when I saw the Bomanus Grant, I thought, okay, this could be a good fit.
Absolutely. Yeah, and the Bomanus Grant is, it's great because it provides a lot of flexibility in terms of, okay, it's a creative project. In Baltic studies, there are a couple other small stipulations, but essentially it's go do something,
yes.
Right? And people have interpreted that lots of different ways. We've got people who do all sorts of visual arts. We have people who do written projects like this, you know, all sorts. So to continue talking about sort of both of these subjects together, as you're talking about these things that cross contemporary borders, you're talking about portions of the historical record that are sometimes more settled, sometimes much less settled, sometimes hardly filled in at all. What do you see particular resonance with the present day from some of those subjects, especially as we're talking about the sort of contemporary blending or taking away of borders with the Schengen area, for example? For example, you know, with the Schengen area, we have borders that are not borders for many purposes. We have a free movement of people between Latvia and Lithuania, at least. And we also are in a moment of intense debate about national memory in lots of ways, especially in the last, you know, year plus with Russia's aggression in Ukraine and how that's affected people here in the Baltics. That's a very large question. It's not really a question, but I was hoping you could just ruminate on that a little bit and chat about sort of contemporary effects, reverberations, or just thoughts you have.
Yeah, that is a big question. To be honest, it's not really something that I look at or really something that I've considered. Although one thing about my doctoral research into the idea of a Latvian-Lithuanian state, even though nominally it's about Latvia and Lithuania, Estonia was very much a part of this.
Mm-hmm.
Again, a very small idea, and the amount of Estonians that were interested in joining with this state, not simply for political protection or security, but actually as a cultural project, was extremely small.
Yeah.
However, you do see a kind of like a much more, at the same time, in a larger scale, you do see a pattern of when there's a threat to security or stability, that Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania will come together, and then they become the Baltic states.
Mm.
But when things are going okay, they're very much separate from one another. Just a pattern.
Yes.
Or a rhythm. Sorry, I don't think that was too much help at all.
No. I mean, but I think that was of help, because it's a reminder that the contemporary unity, I think we can say, of the three Baltic states in present geopolitical challenges, this is not the first time this has happened. The three states have helped each other for decades, for centuries, and the peoples prior to statehood ways.
That's true. Very much with this idea of Latvian Lithuanian statehood.
Especially,
which is only one example of the different configurations that could have become. Whenever you do see some sort of threat or challenge to the safety and security of the region, mm-hmm. you see a little spike, more people becoming interested in it.
Yeah. There's something to be said for having friends, to say the least. To close out, I just am curious to know where you're headed with this research, with this project. Obviously, you've just been on this journey for finding Morta. You've got some writing up to do, I imagine. And you're also here in Kaunas presenting on a portion of your doctoral work, so you've got a lot of irons in the fire.
This is true.
What's the outlook for you for the rest of the year, for going forward? Are you closing out these projects, starting something new?
Well, there's quite a lot going on. So, of course, first of all, here at CBSE 2023 in Kaunas. So I need to survive that presentation. Then immediately after that, I was fortunate enough to receive a dissertation grant from OBS just a few weeks ago. And my summer will mostly be spent in Riga and Vilnius doing archival research there to basically fill in the last section of my thesis, the interwar period.
Mm.
I tried to get to these archives in the past, and either basically the opportunity because of COVID or lack of opportunity because of financial reasons, I just wasn't able to get there.
Yeah.
So at the moment, that's a little bit of a hole that needs to be filled up in the thesis. So that will be my summer. And then, yes, immediately after that, there'll be a lot of writing.
Yes.
There's actually a bit of an overlap between the provisional deadlines for both the dissertation and the Finding Mortar project.
Yeah.
But there is also some overlap between them. So doing work on one also complements another. So it'll be a bit of a struggle, but I think I'll manage.
I think you will as well. I think it'll be exciting to see what comes out of it. James, we're certainly excited to see what shows up with the Finding Mortar project. That'll be a great read, and good luck with your dissertation. As well.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.